Just Label Radio today. Before we sign off, I'd like to also remind you that we have a meeting, monthly meeting, tomorrow night. It is at the William Lucy Building, located at 6025 Burnside East. And we'd love to have you come. We are going to look at some resolutions that we're thinking about sending to the AFL-CIO next month.
That's right.
And so we look forward to seeing you there. And holla. Thank you very much. And have a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is proud to present Arresting Power, Resisting Police Violence in Portland, Oregon, as part of the Cable at the Clinton monthly film series. Arresting Power documents the history of conflict between the Portland police and community members throughout the past 50 years and creates a space for understanding the impacts of police violence and imagining a world without police. Again, that's Arresting Power, Thursday, September 10th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Understand me now.
Billy Rose was a lowrider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. A Billy fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded, knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost. They saw he was severely reprimanded. Take me home, come and lay, help us lay young Billy down.
Good evening, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Ruth Kovach. Tonight I have a guest by the name of Angela Cave, and we're going to talk about things related to prison and prison issues, and I really thank you for joining me. We look forward to this time together. Angela is here as my guest because she's had a father that was incarcerated for some time, and we'll be talking about that a little bit, but that's what qualifies her to be a Prison Pipeline guest. And with her is her mother, Linda, who may or may not speak, and that's okay with us, but she's here, and so anyone else who's listening, just remember if Angela guards what she says, it's because her mom is sitting across the room staring at her. That could happen, you know. How are you, Angela?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
And what do you think about being on radio? Have you ever been on the radio before?
I've never been on the radio before.
Oh, how exciting. I love to introduce people.
I've been telling
people.
My husband I'm going to be a radio star.
Well, you better get on the radio a little bit before you make that decision. Okay, and so you had a father that was incarcerated?
I did. The earliest I can remember of him going in was I was about 11. I know he had been in prison several times prior to that. I just was a little too young, I think, to really clearly remember. Okay.
Well, you brought me a poem that he wrote, and I thought, oh, that'd be nice if she'd read it. And she said, no, I can't read it. I'd start to cry. Or, she didn't say it quite that pathetically, but I could see the eyes welling up. So the relationship between an incarcerated person and their children is often very difficult for some people to understand. It often depends on the nature of the crime. It often depends if the crime had violence or not. It often depends if the crime was personal and had a direct effect on the family, or if it was just sort of like, you know, a Saturday night job was to go hold up banks and it had nothing to do with the family. So we meet all kinds here on Prison Pipeline. But Angela and her father have many good things in their past in the relationship, and he wrote this poem for her. And again, she won't read it or she'd cry, so I'm going to read it just to give you a little insight into just how close and how truly beautiful a relationship between a father and daughter could be, no matter what their status is. He could be incarcerated, she could be on drugs, they could be homely, they could be beautiful, they could be educated, they could be illiterate. But you're my daddy and you're my little girl. It rings through loud and clear sometimes, and we can't get away from that. Reflections of Love. See, it starts out very tender. This is written by her father, Dan. Reflections of love we hold so dear, we gather them all from year to year. Some are happy, some are sad, but never could even one be considered bad. There are many turns and twists to fate, so give your love, don't ever wait. When you look back across the years, be glad if you can shed a tear. People out there who have never dared don't know the meaning of what it is to care. So if you can look at your life and see even one reflection, consider it lucky. Life is short, and that is sad. Be thankful for what you've had. Love is good in whatever form, a learning experience for which you were born. Well, now we know all about your dad. What a heart. That's beautiful. It really is.
Thank you.
When did he write this?
I think it was in 88, so it was while he was in prison for the umpteenth time. I think I was approximately 14-ish.
Was he in prison most of your life as growing up?
He was in and out for robbery, I believe, almost every time. He'd be around for a little while, and that's if he wasn't intoxicated with drugs. And then he'd be in prison.
Uh-huh.
He'd come out and try again. And
did you feel sorry for yourself that other little girls had daddies that did things with them and knew them, and you had this guy that was in and out of prison?
No, I don't think I felt sorry for myself. I think when I look back, I think I felt more sorry about the situation.
Sorry
that
for
he couldn't,
him?
No, just that he couldn't be there. I don't know if it was really for him.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that I think he missed out and I missed out. I think we both missed.
Mm-hmm. I thought you said messed out. Yeah, you kind of messed up too, but you missed out also. That's true.
Right.
You had that one right. Well, how about you? Were you a typical little girl right out of the Dick and Jane book that went to school, did well in school, never misbehaved, never had teacher call about you, never got in trouble, only picked out the right men to be boyfriends and did everything proper that young ladies should and shouldn't do and so on? Is that your story?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, my.
Farthest thing from it.
Well, tell me a little about it.
I grew up in a drug addict environment, an abusive domestic violence environment. My grade school years were, I was a pretty good student. I was in the Toastmasters, which is a speech program through school. I did Girl Scouts. I played instruments. I was in the band. Uh-huh. I didn't really start going crazy until my junior high years, and I
junior high is like 12 years old.
Yeah, 12, 13.
Uh-huh. Well, and I'm 82, and if I think I was only okay for the first 12 years, that sounds like quite a life to me, Angela.
Yeah, I developed a taste for the drugs myself.
You did. Did you pick that up in the streets, or was it because of your father's use of drugs, or what?
I think it's because of that's what I grew up knowing. I grew up thinking, I guess, that that was okay, that that was normal. I was a product of my environment.
Uh-huh.
That was what I saw. That's what I did.
It's nice when we try to figure out, where did I go wrong or whatever happened to me? We say, I was a product of my environment. And you don't blame mom and dad per se. You just say, my environment led me to things like, you know, but...
I don't think it was either one.
No, but
I don't think it was my mother's fault. I don't think it was my father's fault. I think it was comfortable. It was normal, and I liked it.
Oh, you liked what? You liked the drugs you got into, by the way?
Immediately, yeah. Uh-huh. I liked having the friends. I liked the socializing.
So, how old were you when you had your first drug?
I started smoking pot when I was 11, 10, 11.
Uh-huh. I'm thinking of my grandsons and my family's grandchildren in that generation. I hope the 11-year-olds aren't smoking pot. I really do.
I can remember my mother catching me smoking cigarettes. I don't know if she remembers that, but she had caught a group of us smoking cigarettes under a pine tree.
Was that the last day you ever had a cigarette then?
No, I am a current smoker. But I know she certainly wasn't happy about catching us all.
Well, we mothers like to believe the best in our children, and every time we find out they're less than perfect, it's very disappointing. I know that I have gone through that more than once, and I have had wonderful sons that I can't... use the next 30 minutes telling you about how wonderful they are, but the fact is, I know they weren't perfect, and every time I would discover the slightest imperfection, it's heartbreaking, because we parents want that. Do you have children?
I do. I have two children.
How old are they?
23 and 22.
Don't you sort of hope they're perfect?
In my eyes, they are perfect.
I see. Are they on drugs?
I have one that is in recovery. And I have one that is on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
And as far as I'm with the understanding, he has not used anything.
Uh-huh. Well, having one in recovery, you know, they say it runs in the family and we pass it down and we blame the environment, but there's a lot of truth in it. It's very difficult to have a home that has... a lot of use of drugs that it shouldn't have, and expect not to have at least one of them be using drugs. But, you know, it's the same thing. It's music. If there's music in your home and they play music all the time, we love music. And if they play classical music, you love classical music. And if they play rock and roll, then you like rock and roll. And if you're a big sports fiend and every chance you get on TV, you're watching a football game or a basketball game and jumping around the room and yelling and cheering for your, you know, you grow up. The environment teaches us what is a good time and what is not a good time. And if what you learn is that the best times are with drugs, that's what you learn.
It kind of becomes our own personal culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And my culture was music and drugs is what I grew up with, and my father as well.
Well, that's a great combination. All music you know? Sounds better with a few drugs. Everybody knows that.
Absolutely. You know, I can remember going with my father when he was out, and we would be in his truck.
When he was out of prison?
When he was out of prison. He always seemed to try and come around when he was out of prison.
So you see your life with father as times he was in and times he was out as...
I see him as he tried.
Uh-huh.
If he didn't do anything else, he tried.
Well, you know, they all try. We all try. Mm-hmm. In fact, even the ones who are making a complete mess of it are often trying. And you don't succeed unless you at least try.
That's right.
And everything, when someone is on the wrong path, what they need is a change, and they're not going to make that change until they see that the path is wrong and they try. So give them credit for that.
Yeah, I think there's a saying, 2 steps forward, 1 step back.
That's better than 1 step forward and 2 steps back, you know, which happens to a lot of people, unfortunately.
Either way, try, and try again.
Right. That's amazing. Well, so was he much of a father? Was he there or not there, or how much was he away?
My father wasn't really there.
Because he was in prison?
Because he was in prison, yeah.
And when he was home, he was on drugs?
And when he was home, I think when he was home, my father got out of prison and he tried to be good.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, the drugs took him right back where he was, and he did what was comfortable. And then he found himself right back in prison every time.
Well, that's the pattern. The world is full of that pattern over and over.
Yeah. The programs that are available now for inmates coming out of prison, there's ways to help them. There's places they can go. Some of the programs go in to the prisons. My father wasn't in a time when that was going on. My father died in 92. Those programs weren't around.
Yeah, the philosophy still was once a thief, always a thief. Once a murderer, always a murderer. Lock them up, throw away the key. Don't waste money on them. You don't even have to give them decent food. It's okay if the milk is 2 days old because they're just worthless, no good scum, and we just have to, we can't electrocute them all, so we'll give them whatever we want to, and that's not much. But a lot has happened to prison reform now, and I have a great deal of faith in the changes that can happen to an incarcerated person. I have a great deal of faith in the programs that get them on the right path. And I have so much faith in it that when I meet someone who was recently released, I don't want to just give them a chance, but I'm very hopeful because I think they have gone through a period of time to sit back and look at what was wrong and what was right about their life, and they've finally chosen to get on a better path, and I have more faith that they're going to be doing right than a lot of people who have never been in trouble, because they've thought it out and they said, this is right, this is wrong, I don't like what's wrong, I'm going to do what's right. That's a big decision for people.
Well, yeah, and you know, I'm with the understanding from reading through my father's letters and knowing the conversations that were struck outside of prison with him. There's a lot of thinking that goes on while in prison.
Not much else to do some days.
And yeah. And so when they get out and life actually is there and families are there, mm-hmm. and they're not sure how to respond, it's really easy to go back to that comfortable space when things aren't comfortable.
Well, some of the best fiction novels and literature is about people who had something and they throw it away, and then when they're without it and they know it's lost, when they get it back, that's the great novel ending, is to rediscover that what you had was good and you shouldn't have thrown it away. And
oh yes, yes, the love. Yes, that I believe that story that you're talking is, if you love someone, set them free. If they come back, then it was meant to be.
Oh, I like that. That's very good.
Yes. There is probably some truth to that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love someone and I wouldn't want to set them free.
Hmm. Okay.
I'd like to keep him to myself.
I see. I think they call that possessive. I don't know. maybe I'm not understanding. Well, anyway, so you had a relationship with your father while he was in prison, of letters and visits.
I did.
And did you ever think to yourself, prison is for bad people and he's in prison, ergo he's bad?
As a little kid, yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Were you ashamed of the fact that you had a father in prison when other kids would talk about their fathers and they'd ask you about yours and you had to somehow tell them yours was in prison? Did that shame you or embarrass you? Or
no, I didn't know any different. That was all I knew.
He was still your daddy.
He was still my dad, and every boyfriend my mother ever had been in prison.
Oh, well, good for her.
So that was pretty normal.
Uh-huh.
Prison was normal. It was a normal part of my growing up, my childhood.
Mm-hmm. So back to environment. She had taught you the compassion for people in prison. That's a good lesson.
Yeah, yes, it was compassion. I mean, there's a lot of bad things that, you know, evolved out of it all, but it takes a very compassionate person to keep trying.
I think that the word challenge becomes important. If we've never been challenged about our priorities or our values, and we just sort of take things for granted that this is the right thing to do, this is the wrong thing to do, and I'd never do that because it isn't right, what would people say, you know? It's because we've never been challenged. But when one has been challenged and they finally sit down and think it out and they say, this is right and this is wrong and I'm going to do this because it's right, not because it's easiest or not because I like it, but because it's right and being right is important to me. That's a conclusion that requires some maturity.
Yeah, I like to think of that as integrity.
That's a good word for it, absolutely. You have integrity, I can tell.
I try.
So with all this integrity and all this wisdom, isn't it true that you spent a lot of years taking drugs?
I did. Mm-hmm. Most of my youth, actually, was spent doing drugs, taking drugs, spilling drugs, selling drugs.
And what turned that around?
My mother.
Okay.
And my children. My mother threatened my children to take them.
Your mother said it's the kids or get off drugs, okay?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
That was easy for her?
No, but I think my mother had chased me around enough and watched me do all that I'd done and drowned myself enough that she wasn't about to let the kids go through what I had gone through. I think she knew that was the only thing that mattered.
She's a wise woman. She's sitting here with us trying to just be very interested as if this was a story about someone else. But honey, Linda, it's about you. And
I know, I'm kind of embarrassed.
Yeah, no, you're a good mother, and you certainly made some good choices when you did some of the things that were not that easy to do, to say to your daughter, you know, I'm taking your kids if you don't get yourself straight. That's not easy. That's not easy. So, and how about your father? Is he with you still or what?
No, my father died my 18th birthday of a heroin overdose.
Was he at home or in prison or where?
No, he had gotten out. I believe he'd been out a year and a half, almost 2 years at that time. And that was his last shot.
So it happened while he was away from the home. Then you got news, the old phone call or policeman at the door?
I did. My mother, actually,
mm-hmm.
had told me on my birthday. I believe it was my grandmother who called.
Really?
I'm not positive. My grandmother or my auntie.
Well, I don't want to get into the story of Ruth, but I've had a few phone calls where a policeman would show up at the door at 2 in the morning, or the phone would ring at midnight, and it would be about someone having an accident or a problem of some sort. And it's left me that I always answer my phone, no matter what time of day or night it rings, and sometimes I get wrong numbers at 2 in the morning, and I answer the door, and I answer the phone, I mean, and I handle it. Oh, wrong number, okay, and I hang up, and they think they haven't, they say, sorry if I disturbed you. I say, oh, no problem, and I hang up, and then I lay there and cry because I think of
All the horrible things that could have been.
All the things that could have been or should have been and have been and so on. And it takes a certain amount of courage. We just don't forget, do we?
No. No, we don't forget.
So what have you learned from all of this? What are you doing now?
I'm currently a drug and alcohol counselor.
Isn't that interesting?
I have a certain passion.
For what?
For helping others in those circumstances.
And does your background and the experiences we've already talked about make you a better counselor, do you think?
I like to hope so. I think it accounts for something and gives me a better understanding, a little more empathy.
Well, I've been a teacher all my life, especially music, and I always say when we teach, we learn. And so whatever you've had to get straight in your head, whatever you had to justify and whatever you had to define as right and wrong, as a counselor, you reinforce those decisions over and over again. And it's a wonderful field for you to be in, and it makes you a very worthy counselor because you've been around the block, so to speak. And I remember there was a brief time when someone tried to get laws passed that anyone who had ever been in rehab or been addicted could not be counselors, and I thought, yeah, I fought that with others. I said, no. If they've been there, done that, and they got through it, that's the very best kind of counselor you can get, and I think you're proof of that. I'm sure you're a fine counselor. So I don't know.
I try. I certainly try. I have a love that's pretty deep. I don't want others to go through what my father went through, mm-hmm. What my children have gone through, what my mother or what I've gone through.
And your kids are going to be straight.
I hope so.
Well, how could they not be now with your guidance? You're going to, you know all the signs to watch for.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop an individual.
So you don't think anything your mother could have done or said would have changed your path?
No.
Because you pick it up where? In the streets and with friends?
I don't think anything my mother or my father could have done, should have done, would have said, didn't say, would have changed my mind in any way.
Well, for all you parents who love your children very much, wasn't that encouraging to hear that nothing you could do, nothing you could say would have changed it? Whether you get it in the streets or just some need, you think you're giving them all the love and care and everything that a parent should do, and in some young people there's just this longing and this missing element, and the only answer they find for it is drugs and alcohol. It's very hard to say, don't feel guilty, it's not your fault, and yet you think, well, if what they needed was love and they didn't get it from you, whose fault is it? And it's a dilemma for many folks that have tearfully told me they don't know where their kids went wrong because they did everything they could. They gave them everything. They loved them and so on. But it's a dilemma for many folks. And if you fall short of being perfect, you're not alone.
Yeah, that is true. My mother was the most perfect that she could be given what she was given.
Look at that. No, I'm so sorry I made you cry. And your mother isn't crying. She's just looking shocked because she doesn't believe she was perfect at all. And yet the fact that you're here and you're on this side of the fence talking about wanting to help people who are addicted, I think you must have done something right, Linda. I mean, try not to be so hard on yourself. This young lady turned out okay anyway.
Yeah.
She's beautiful. She's sincere. And she's certainly, you went to college and have a degree in counseling and so on. So, I mean, it's not that you just have a gift. You've trained yourself and you've chosen a path and you're doing it. And I think that some of the best people in our counseling fields are people who have been around the block, so to speak.
I've worked pretty hard to get where I am with a lot of help from a lot of people. I've had a lot of support.
Well, you've used it. You've used it well. I'm proud to know you.
Thank you.
And I think that your story is one that is out there of folks, they get on the wrong path and
something turns them around, and almost always, if they really got deep enough into the trouble that drugs and alcohol, et cetera, gets them into, and they figure out how to get out of it, they often turn to becoming a person that tries to help others, and I'm really happy to see that.
I just hope that, you know, for the guys and the women that are in prison, I hope they can make use of the programs that are there.
They have some wonderful programs, too.
If not for themselves in the beginning, do it for their kids.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because their kids need them. Sometimes we find ourselves later.
Right. Well, and you know, I'm an advocate of Harry Olson's program, Phoenix Rising Transitions, because he recognizes that the transitional period when folks are first released of finding housing and employment and being in some kind of an environment surrounded by other people who are on the same path is one of the most useful tools we can have to getting it straight. So I'm proud to know you and your mother and Harry Olson and all the other people that are working in this direction. And I want to thank you and you too, Linda, for being on Prison Pipeline tonight, and to all of you for listening. Good night.
Billy Rose was a low rider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Elephant Revival, Thursday, September 10th at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Elephant Revival is a five-piece band from Colorado that play folk music with gypsy, Celtic, and Americana influences. The show is originally scheduled for Revolution Hall, and all tickets for that show will be honored. Again, that's Elephant Revival, Thursday, September 10th, 10:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 South.